Hello and welcome to the Hayloft Hour. I am your host Jordan, otherwise known as Spotted Bay Productions. I have been viewing the world through the ears of a horse since I was 2 years old, and this podcast is my attempt at uncovering the dark sides of the equine industry. True crime, scandals, history, mystery, and horror stories that might otherwise stay locked away in the hayloft forever. My purpose is to make these stories well known so that we can make sure they never happen again and to let others know who may find themselves in these situations that they are not alone. Make sure to join us on social media to follow my daily life with my two horses. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Spotted Bay Productions. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe or follow wherever you listen and share it with your friends. If you have an episode suggestion or a personal story you would like to submit, email it to me at spottedbay@gmail.com or submit it on spottedbay.com. But please leave out the personal info and just leave behind the juicy details. I apologize for not getting this episode out last Friday, but I had to do a lot more research on details for this story, and life was just pretty busy for a bit in general. All of this information has been found online and compiled for your entertainment and education. As such, inaccuracies and out-of-date information are always a possibility. In today's episode, we will be covering the rescue of the famous Lipizzaner horses by U.S. troops from the Nazis during World War II. As you may guess, this story includes descriptions of war history and brief references to eugenics, the Nazi Party, white supremacy, and the Holocaust. If any of that is too troubling for you to hear, feel free to skip this episode and we'll catch you next time. I don't go into any graphic details and also want to point out that I am in no way a history buff, so I've done my best to cover the war-related details of this story, but there's a fair chance that I've missed a touch of nuance here and there, and for that I do apologize in advance. I also want to acknowledge the absolute horrors that occurred in World War II, including the genocide of Jewish people and others who Hitler deemed as unsuitable for his, quote, master race. I will not be discussing any of that here, but it feels tasteless to refer to any of these events without acknowledging what happened and making sure that everyone understands that I am in no way intending to minimize them, but rather not delving into details that are not directly relevant to the story. I also don't feel in any way qualified to speak on the Holocaust and related issues stemming from the Nazi Party, so please seek out sources that are experts on that if you would like to learn more. This is simply one very small story with a happy ending to come out of World War II, but in absolutely no way can it undo the infinite negative results of the entire war. With all that said, let's jump into the story. In the spring of 1945, the war was beginning to wind down. Hitler had committed suicide and Germany had surrendered. U.S. troops were moving through southern Germany towards Czechoslovakia, and Colonel Hank Reed was approached by a German officer. The officer pleaded with American troops to come save the horses that were being kept at Hostow because the Red Army was on their way. The Red Army was the Army and Air Force of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, USSR, or the Soviet Union for short. For a quick history refresher, the Soviet Union was part of the Allied powers along with France, Great Britain, and the United States, and fought against the Axis powers composed of Germany, Japan, and Italy. German troops, who just days earlier were fighting against Allied troops, were now begging the US troops for help against a new mutual enemy, the Soviets. If the Soviets made it to the farm where these horses were being kept, the German officer believed the horses would likely be slaughtered for meat at worst, or harnessed to pull carts at best. But these were not just any horses. These were horses deemed to be the best in Europe. The horses at Hostow had been seized by the Nazis from several countries and included Thoroughbreds, Arabians, and the Lipizzaners of the Spanish Riding School. In my research, I found a lot of varying numbers for how many horses were at the Hostow farm, but the lowest and most frequent number was 600 horses, and some of them topped 1,000. So we are talking about a lot of horses that are living at this farm and now need to be transported to safety. This was a unique situation that involved enemies becoming friends and vice versa. The Spanish Riding School had a long history of breeding some of the best horses in Europe and possibly the world. It was founded during the Habsburg monarchy when they controlled Spain and Austria. During the Renaissance, classical riding had been revived, and the Spanish School of Riding needed perfect horses for this type of riding. The Spanish horse was a product of crossing Berber and Arab stallions with Iberian mares. These Spanish horses were brought to Austria in 1562 and were split between two farms. Some were taken by Maximilian II to Cladrube, while the others were taken by Archduke Charles in Lipizza. The horses who went to Lipizza became known as the Lipizzaner horses. The horses that went to Cladrube were bred into a draftier type horse, while the Lipizza farm was focusing on riding and carriage type horses. At times, the farms would exchange breeding stock, but mostly continued crossing their own horses with other European breeds. By the 1800s, none of the original Spanish horses remained for breeding, so Arab blood was introduced to the breed. Lipizzaners are extremely noticeable and are typically gray, with a sturdy body, a unique head with large, gentle eyes, and small, alert ears. Other colors used to be more common, such as red, black, or even pinto markings, but they are not as common anymore. Lipizzaners are usually quite small, ranging from 14-2 to 15-2 hands, but have strong, powerful muscling all around and often crusty necks. The original Spanish horses that were the foundation of this breed were the namesake for the riding school. The Lipizzan farm was owned by the Habsburg monarchy until 1916, and any time there had been impending danger, such as war or other conflict, the horses would be moved elsewhere until things were safe in the area again. During World War I, horses were moved around for safety, and when the Austrian-Hungarian Empire was divided into new republics after the war, Austria became the owner of the breeding stock and stallions that were at the riding school. Many of the horses ended up in Italy and others in Czechoslovakia. World War I not only left a massive impact on the people of the region, but also decimated the equine population. It is believed that half of Germany's horses were lost in World War I, and many of those remaining had to be exported for reparations as indicated in the Treaty of Versailles. Germany's economy had also taken such a downturn that keeping and breeding horses became incredibly difficult for most people. When Hitler came to power, automobiles were becoming more and more prevalent in everyday life, including military operations. However, Hitler still strongly believed that equines were necessary for military efforts, and because of this, he was interested in ramping up horse breeding in Germany. Hitler took control of the Spanish riding school in 1938 when Austria was annexed. The famous Lipizzaners would become the basis for Hitler's new master plan, breeding a super horse that would be perfect for his, quote, Aryan master race, unquote. Hitler had hired eugenicist Gustav Rau, who claimed he could excessively inbreed the Lipizzaners to create a pure super breed in 3 years. Not only is aggressive inbreeding going to cause a lot of issues, but considering a horse's gestational period and age of sexual maturity, I really don't see how he was going to accomplish this in only 3 years, but I digress. Not only was Hitler interested in breeding a super horse, but he was also interested in restoring the equine population that had been largely decimated in Europe during World War I. While the war was underway, Alois Podhoski, the head of the Spanish riding school, pleaded with German troops to move the horses from the school to safety, as had been done in previous times of conflict, but it was not allowed. It took until 1942 for horses to be evacuated. The majority of the horses were moved from the Spanish riding school to a farm in Hosto, Czechoslovakia, where Hitler's breeding experiment would take place, and the stallions were sent to Upper Austria and kept at St. Martin. The farm in Hosto was heaven in every way, described as being absolutely pristine with lush pastures and well-groomed horses. Something noted by author Elizabeth Letts in her book The Perfect Horse is that it was a quirk of Nazi philosophy, so inhumane to humans that animals were treated with the utmost care and kindness in regards to the luxurious treatment of the horses in Nazi care. When the German officer from the Hosto farm approached U.S. Colonel Hank Reed, he was not just approaching a soldier, he was approaching a horseman. Colonel Reed knew how special the Lipizzaners were, but also knew that entering the territory in which the horses were being kept would directly contradict an agreement that had been made with the Soviets. The U.S. Army had agreed with Stalin that they wouldn't cross Germany's border with Czechoslovakia, but obviously they would need to do this if they were going to rescue the horses being kept at Hosto. The Germans at the Hosto farm needed U.S. troops. The Red Army was moving through war-torn Europe, and they had already taken over Budapest, where there was a large population of Lipizzaners at the Royal Hungarian Riding School. The army took most of those horses for meat and spared some to haul wagons. The grooms and riding students were shown no mercy and didn't leave the farm alive. After receiving approval from General Patton, U.S. Captain Tom Stewart was sent in to attempt negotiations with the Germans at the farm. A German veterinarian was running the farm and did want to protect the horses, but feared retaliation if he agreed to a surrender, but did eventually agree. The prisoners being held at the farm were released, and the horses were claimed as property of the U.S. Army by Colonel Reed. This was nowhere near a happy ending yet, however. There were several obstacles left to overcome. The first obstacle was, of course, the impending arrival of the Red Army and a rogue SS unit in the area. Both were closing in on Hostow, along with bands of rebels and militias formed along the countryside. Leading a massive herd of horses through rough and dangerous terrain would not be easy, especially with most of the area being riddled with landmines. Colonel Reed went in search of the advancing Soviets to negotiate escape. He bluffed, telling the Soviets that the U.S. Army and remaining Germans were prepared for a fight, and that this was American-controlled land. Those were both lies, but it made the Soviets pause just long enough to put a plan in motion to begin move out of the farm. Many of the horses residing at the farm were broodmares in very late stages of pregnancy or who had very young foals at their sides. They would not be able to cover this distance safely on hoof. Next was the feat of separating mares and stallions to avoid any fighting on the way. There was not an endless convoy of cushy trucks and trailers to be loaded and hauled over paved roads. This was more like moving a herd of cows on a cattle drive across open land. Thus, the mission was officially named Operation Cowboy. The horses were split into groups. First, the broodmares and foals were loaded onto flatbed military vehicles that were flanked with armored cars. Then, mares and stallions were separated and a few miles were kept between them. The cowboys on this cattle drive were mostly Cossacks on their ponies from the Russian steppes and some U.S. soldiers on horses from the hostile farm. At the back of the long train of horses were horse-drawn wagons with supplies from the farm. Several people came along too, including the former prisoners at the farm and Germans who had been working at the farm who were now refugees. The road wasn't smooth, and veterinarians were constantly checking over the horses for injuries or signs of lameness. However, enemies weren't encountered during the trip. This would have been agonizing hours of riding or walking, just hoping that the horses stayed calm. There would have been constant fear of setting off landmines or being ambushed by enemies. At night, they found a quiet spot where both horses and humans could rest and fortunately had a relatively peaceful night. The rest of the trip occurred without much incidents, and the only thing left to do was cross the border into American-controlled territory. However, it certainly couldn't have just been easy. Upon arrival to the bridge at the border, it was barricaded by Czech communist partisans, loyalists to the Soviet Union. A small group of armed soldiers with vehicle-mounted machine guns were all that was left standing between several hundred horses, their exhausted soldier companions, and many dozen refugees and their collective freedom. Border Patrol stood their ground with no intention of letting one single horse through, because these were Soviet horses now. Each group had their machine guns trained on the other, not willing to give in. A lieutenant in the U.S. Army held up three fingers and began counting down slowly without saying a word. Everyone knew what this countdown meant. He dropped his first finger. Tensions were high, but no one moved. His second finger began to drop, and at this moment, Border Patrol came to their senses and decided this wasn't worth dying for. The Soviet loyalists moved to the side and allowed everyone to pass. Every horse hoof trotted over the bridge to safety, but they weren't exactly home free, not just yet. It took over 10 years for the horses to return to Austria and Vienna due to post-war occupation in these areas. The Soviets didn't give up their occupation of Austria until 1955, and at this point the Spanish riding school finally got its prized horses back home. Louis Holtz, a lieutenant in the 2nd Cavalry who was part of this rescue mission, was interviewed years later and said, "We thought we had a chance to save a sliver of culture for the rest of the world. We sensed the end of the war was in sight, and we were in a frame of mind to give credence to beauty once again." Many sources credit General Patton with being the one who saved the horses, but from what I can tell in my reading, this wasn't exactly the case. As I said, Colonel Reed was the one who was initially approached, and Captain Stewart negotiated the surrender. Oddly enough, General Patton was at the Spanish riding school just days before this when it was captured by Lieutenant General Walton H. Walker's XX U.S. Army Corps. Both Lieutenant General Walker and General Patton were horsemen themselves and had requested a performance of the famous stallions. Patton, as well as the head of the riding school, Podhoski, had both competed in equestrian events at the Olympics together and had been reunited in this weird twist of fate. It may have been this previous friendship that enabled Podhoski to ask General Patton for the official protection of the U.S. Army for his beloved horses. General Patton agreed, and thus the riding school was put under special protection of the U.S. Army. How this event correlated to the interaction between Colonel Reed and the German officer from Hostow seems to be up for some debate. Some sources say that Colonel Reed knew about the riding school's protection by the U.S. Army at the time he was approached, and others say that he wasn't aware and it was merely coincidence. In the latter scenario, it's said that Colonel Reed contacted General Patton about the request to rescue the horses at Hostow, and General Patton agreed because of his promise to Podhoski. Either way, it seems to have been mutually agreed upon that this was something the U.S. Army was going to do. Many dramatized versions of this story seem to solely credit Patton with this rescue operation and paint him as a benevolent individual who was just a horseman with a big heart. This, of course, isn't exactly the case either. Patton was a horseman, sure. However, in his autobiography, he recounts how he felt watching the Lipizzaner stallions perform. "It struck me as rather strange," he wrote, "that in the midst of a world at war, some 20 young and middle-aged men in great physical condition had spent their entire time teaching a group of horses to wiggle their butts and raise their feet. Much as I like horses, this seems to me wasted energy." He was known by others in the military as Old Blood and Guts and had a reputation for being racist and anti-Semitic, even though he fought against the Nazis. Some of his notable erratic behavior has been attributed to suspected head trauma throughout his life. I'm not here to give an autobiography about him, but he is referred to in the story, as well as others, about this period of military history as some sort of hero, but I want to make it known that he was entirely problematic and not someone that should be idolized for taking part in one event that happened to rescue animals. After the war wound down, a gift was given from Podhoski to Colonel Fred Hamilton, the chief of the Army's remount. He was allowed to choose 200 horses, including from the prized Lipizzaners, to import to the United States. The ship nearly capsized on the way. However, every single horse did make it to the U.S. safely. The U.S. Department of Agriculture ultimately disbanded the remount, and the horses were sold to private owners. Descendants of horses that were a part of this exceptional rescue effort are surely still grazing in U.S. pastures today. If you enjoyed this story, please be sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen and share it with your friends. You can find us on social media at Spotted Bay Productions, and I thank you so much for supporting me and this podcast.